Across the Park podcast is proud to be sponsored by Globe Gas and Heating. For the best kitchen and bathroom renovations, boiler servicing and repair, and central and underfloor heating in the Northwest, head over to globecentralheating.com and quote Across the Park for a free quote. Hello, welcome to episode 11 of Across the Park podcast, season 23-24. We usually end on this. Let's start with it. Up them toffees. Since Luton, they've roped me right back in, So myself, Ian Mills and Gary Judge are going to cover the West Ham game, look ahead to Burnley, get some social questions off you. But we're joined by a very special guest, our friend who joined the Instant Match Reaction last season, over from Lynchburg, Virginia, Pat, massive Evertonian. Welcome back to Across the Park podcast, my man. How are you?
Good to be back. Doing great. A little tired, but yeah.
Yeah, flew straight in this morning, straight to the podcast studio. Yeah.
No expense spare from Across the Park.
Yeah, don't say that too loud. First of all, we're going to come back to you, Pat, and talk a little bit about what it's like to support Everton as an American. You're not even a Scouser who's exiled. You're actually an American who's chose, for some reason, to support our football club. So I do want to get to that. Before we do, I met you last season at the Bootle game up the books, and then we met each other again the next day at the Manchester United game when you came on the podcast, and then you've been back in the States since. So the tail end of last season for me and Judgy and most Evertonians who were here and I speak to was sleepless nights. It was, you know, barely looking forward to the games coming, fearful. Was it the same for you, even though you're so far away?
Yeah, it was hard to explain it to other people, though. Mm. Like, yeah, it's a stressful thing. I remember we have an annual kickball game where I work. It's like interns and people who work there full-time, and we like go play kickball. It's just that I don't know if you have kickball here. It's a version of baseball where you kick the ball. I didn't think of that. It's part of baseball.
I've played it like as a camp game, a soccer camp game.
Gotcha. Kids, gotcha.
Yeah, I get it.
So we were playing that, and I had a laptop set up right next to third base. And they were like, "You're going to break your laptop." And I was like, "Okay, fine. I'll watch it on my phone if that's what happens."
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's not something you can fully explain.
It's a good point, then, isn't it? We've got each other and we've got our friends and stuff, and we're all going through it together. And you're a little bit exiled when it comes to that. I suppose you're on the internet and looking for.
But at the same time, though, you're also not surrounded by it, like everywhere you turn. So at least when the game's finished, so to speak, you can kind of go, okay, I'll leave that for a bit. And until the following week, we don't get that break. So it swings and roundabouts a little bit, isn't it?
It does, yeah. Look, we'll revisit you supporting Everton from America, like I said, at the end of the show. Judgy, start with you, the performance yesterday, West Ham. You said to me yesterday morning that you heavily fancied us. You had a good feeling about it. You made me put a bet on, so I'll thank you for that. You got me in the mood. And Everton, in my opinion, really, really strong performance yesterday. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, and I think as you said at the top of the show, joking slightly, I think we've shown that we're more than capable of that in recent weeks. I think it started with the away performance at Brentford, and it's carried through to a few, you know, away games since. Obviously, Villa away in the cup, and yesterday, I think he's found a formula certainly away from home with that group of players, and the players are buying into it. You know, you can see the spirit. You've certainly seen that, the spirit, on a number of occasions yesterday. The players kind of backing each other. They certainly know exactly how they're approaching games away from home. They know how to unsettle the opposition. I think you would put, without disrespecting the opposition, I think you put West Ham and Brentford in a similar bracket in terms of the where they sit in the league.
That's fair, yeah.
Someone actually said on Sky yesterday, I think it was an interesting point, that West Ham are almost the measure of a Premier League team, as in the better teams beat them and the weaker teams tend to lose to them. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like the I don't know what you kind of, what's the word?
Stereotypical.
The stick almost, you know, that you kind of, how you get on against West Ham is where you sit in the league. And interesting way of putting it, I don't think, based on what we've seen at Goodison, I don't think it would be the same outcome if we played them at Goodison at the moment, because we certainly seem to struggle and have different issues when we play at Goodison. But yeah, just from a simplistic point of view, I thought I thought, and what's great about, without plugging too much, in fact, I will plug it, our opposition podcasts are brilliant. It gives you a real insight into where the opposition are, you know, what their strengths are, where you can really get at them. After having a good chat with them last week, it really convinced me that we could get some success from the game. That added to the fact they played in Europe and they were a little bit leggy, I think helps us because, you know, whatever you say about Zajic, and we'll come on to that later in terms of crediting the manager, the team are a lot fitter, they're a lot more organised, and we're difficult to play against when we set ourselves up in that manner. We're certainly going to come on to individuals, I'm sure, as well, but Dominic Calvert-Lewin, you know, what a difference he makes. You know, we've seen that at the end of last season. And we're seeing it now. We're a completely different team and you know, a completely different animal with Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And, you know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, in as confident a mood as he is now, you know, it does give you a lot more, you know, room for optimism, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Pat, bringing you in and sticking with the theme of Dominic Calvert-Lewin, really important player for me. I'm not his biggest fan. I do think there's times where he can be wasteful, but we're not going to go there today. We're going to be positive. He does make a big difference to our team. That's his third goal of the season. Very well taken. Do you see someone now who's maybe benefiting from someone's breathing down his shoulder and that can maybe help us get the best out of Lewin this season?
I don't know if... Yeah, I don't know if it's because he's got Beto breathing down his shoulder. There's definitely some pressure on him to perform. He's also healthy, though. I think. I mean, that's the big difference. When his quads are intact, he's a hell of a player. I mean, the competition always helps. He's healthy. He's able to run for 90 minutes, and he brings other players into the game. He makes Doucouré way better because he creates space for Doucouré. That's why Doucouré, I don't know what he scored this year, like four goals or something.
Yeah, he's our top scorer. I mean, our regular listeners and viewers, they know Man and Judge's opinions, but your opinion as a whole, are you a fan of Dominic Calvert-Lewin?
Yeah, I like him. I think he's probably a mid-table level striker, which is the type of player which right now we can get to play for us and then keep and not have to sell him on in 2 years. Hopefully he does good enough this year that we can, not that we can sell him, but that theoretically he would make more money for us. But he's certainly makes a difference to the team.
Yeah, he does.
That allows other people to play. And yesterday he was a real nuisance himself as well. Always is.
He's an important cog and Judgy to bring you back in. Someone again, and I'm proven to be wrong on this podcast more times than I'm not these days. I was quite worried by Jared Branthwaite coming back in the summer. I wasn't overly convinced when he played under Frank. I didn't think playing a few games for PSV in that league qualified him to be the answer. He's putting toilet roll down my mouth and shutting me up each time he plays. Yesterday, colossal.
Yeah, just want to get this off my chest. Yardstick was the term I was thinking of before, and I'm like, the measuring stick, whatever. Jared Branthwaite, I can't speak highly enough.
Every game better.
Every game better, yeah. And you know, it really advocates as well. It's a huge credit to the backroom staff. Everton's recruitment team and Everton's, you know, football staff have took a lot of stick over the last few years and a lot of the time it's been justified. But the decision to send Jared Branthwaite on loan to PSV for the whole of last season has paid huge dividends. He's grown within himself. He plays in Europe. He's played with a team that obviously play out from the back, but maybe not. You know, PSV are kind of, if you like, the second or third team in Holland. So he's had to come up against better opposition. He's played against good attacking players, certainly in training. As I say, he's played European football. He's been tested. He's come back a serious player. And a lot of the time we've made the wrong call with these young players. We haven't quite managed them in the right way, in the way we've sent them out on loan. We never seem to get, certainly in recent years, the full potential from them, but it looks like we've managed Jared Branthwaite's development to a T. And you know, Pat spoke then about, if you like, the likelihood of someone coming in for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I don't think there's any shadow of a doubt, unfortunately, but positively, if you look at it from Pat's perspective, that someone or several clubs will be sniffing around Jared Branthwaite. And for me, I'm okay with that. I got asked on another podcast, might have even been the the opposition preview for the West Ham game. You know, is it worrier when you've got Branthwaite playing so well and other teams going to take him? Like, no. If players play that, you know, much out of the skin and standing head and shoulders above others and are dominating games and are getting man of the match, we're reaping the benefits as a club now. If they move on to bigger and better things, so be it. I've seen it happen, you know, so many times down the years. And if the club get the right amount of money in for him, but in the meantime, he moves us up the league, he keeps us safe, then so be it. But, you know, full credit to Jarrod Branthwaite. He's took his chance with both hands. Still a bit disappointed the manager didn't show faith from the start of the season, because I think we might have been looking at a slightly different picture if Branthwaite would have played all of the games that Michael Keane was allowed to play at the start. But, you know, we are where we are now, and I'm delighted with his form.
Yeah, look, there's some individuals our listeners want to ask about. So we'll save the individual performers, sort of social media, really. But bringing you back in, Sean Dyche is someone who, if you look at social media, there's a bit of a split. There's some fans who are with him and accepting of the situation, other fans, not so much. I think it's fair that we give the manager credit. As Judgy said there, especially away from home, he's found this formula now where we're going away from home. I'm confident watching this team away from home. They're coming back with points. Goodison is the next sort of move on a chessboard he needs to sort. But how have you assessed the manager's job so far this season?
My theory is that they don't practice shooting. Because at home, we get a ton of shots. XG is through the roof, but they don't go in. Like, consistently, that's what happens. But then you get a really good chance in an away game. And it's like we're much better, much more clinical. Maybe it's knowing that you're only getting a few and not that you're going to get a bunch more. I don't know what it is. But I think we're in the last, since losing to Luton, it's been, we've looked good overall. Drawing with Sheffield is bad too, but, it's ups and downs. And that's it's a rebuild, and rebuilds are it's a lot more common in American sports. And what I noticed across all four major American sports that I watch, a rebuild, the first stage is wild inconsistency. Yeah. So like you'll go on the road and win against West Ham, you'll also lose at home to Luton.
Yeah.
Because I think we just don't have that many different ways of playing. So as the rebuild continues, I imagine it, I at least hope, maybe I'm being a little optimistic here. I hope it looks like rebuilds do in other sports where you have a draft system, and you sort of bottom out and bounce back up. Hopefully it's a valid parallel, and not just something I'm imagining.
I actually think you're spot on. I think that the bit at the start where you mentioned about the shooting practice in a simplistic way, I think you're right. Unfortunately, I think at home we're our own worst enemy in terms of the fans. I don't think the fans at the moment, and I say this with bated breath and awaiting all of the abuse I'm going to get for this, but I think most fans will accept where I'm coming from. We've got a fantastic group of fans that travel away from home, and from the first whistle, regardless of the form of the team, regardless of what's going on behind the scenes, you know, as soon as that whistle's blown, if not before, then are completely behind those 11 players on the pitch and the manager. At home, it's not the same. It's like we're waiting for the chance to get on top of the players. And I think, you know, what you're getting at in terms of the shots there, the players can feel that pressure. You know, if you get an early goal like we did, or an early-ish goal against Bournemouth, the attitudes of the fans change and suddenly everyone's behind the team, and the, you know, the feeling as a player is that you gain confidence from that. I think generally at home though, our players feel as though the fans they're almost waiting for that moan and groan. It's like, oh, and then they shrink into themselves and suddenly that chance comes with a heap of pressure. And it's different to away from home when every shot, every corner, every kick, every tackle is greeted with a cheer, is greeted with a song. And I think, you know, we've got to be accountable for that. I'm not talking about shifting it back onto the fans and saying we need to greet coaches in and all that stuff. I just think we need to just take a breath every now and again and just let the players play a bit at home. I think we've got to be accountable for that. But I completely agree with what you're talking about in terms of the rebuilds, and you've got to do it bit by bit. And Klopp, if you look across the park at Liverpool, his first bit was, I just want to get a score and goals. and there was 5-3s and there was three fours and there was 2-3s and 3-2s. Okay, we're scoring goals. Now we need to get us being a little bit more hard to beat. Dyche just done it the other way around and said, well, we need to be hard to beat and then we'll work out a formula of how to score goals. I think he's getting there with that now. You know, obviously the win at Brentford started with three goals at Bournemouth, at home. Before that, it was, you know, we hadn't scored three goals at all under Dyche apart from the game at Brighton. So I agree with you. I think the rebuild's a really good way of putting it because he has had to do that rebuild and we seen the stat and it got put in our group yesterday about the number of players in that first 11 that are, you know, 20.
The oldest was 30.
21 to 24. So many young players in there and that's a big factor in terms of the inconsistency, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I mean, Tarkowski's a good leader. Pickford's a good leader. Young is a good leader if he's been a little bit shaky as a player. You have guys like that. And this is, I guess, keeping the parallel going in American sports, you have players who have been there and done it will go back to rebuilding teams and help create that culture, create a culture of winning. And I think what we have now with Coleman, Tarkowski, and Young in that back four, that's a culture of defensive solidity. Idrissa Gueye as well.
I don't think he's the most global one.
But yeah, creating a stable base. Like the team has an identity now. Like I know we're going to line up 4-4-1-1.
Pretty much every week.
It's consistent. They work hard. They're organized most of the time. Hopefully that's something to build on. But it's not going to win games every week.
I agree.
There are going to be some weeks where it's just the organization isn't enough because you're not finishing.
I've been
to one away game, so I'm far from the most qualified person to talk about it. But you're right, the environment is different. I'm sure they do practice shooting.
It is a
different environment. I'm not sure if that affects the players. I've obviously never been in that situation. I'm a very mediocre athlete as opposed to professional.
Pat, what do you do for a living? What's your job back home?
I'm a stadium announcer.
Okay, so imagine being a stadium announcer and you've got five or six, just on a small level, five or six people in your ear going, you're crap, you're rubbish, what are you doing? Like constantly in your ear. Conversely, six people sitting behind you just like, spot on, man. Yeah, you're cool.
It's completely different.
You doubt everything you do, don't you? And you're suddenly stuttering and stuff. So I think on a simplistic level, like that's where I'm trying. And look, by the way, I'm not saying I'm the absolute saint here in the match and I'm constantly being positive towards the players. And there's a time and a place to actually have a go at them as well and let them know it's not good enough. But I just think we need a little bit more patience with this young team, particularly given that
the Luton game, young players. The Luton game was the example when we went 1-0 down. Everyone just thought we had used to you. And it was Luton. And collectively, everyone thought, we're not going to get back in here. And everyone sort of gave up. But I do think that you're very right in what you're saying, Judgey. The away following compared to the home following and the atmosphere, it's very, very different. You hear it. I'm not an away supporter, really. One or two, perhaps. You hear them loud, positive all the time. You never really hear that negativity from them. At Goodison, I think it's a collectiveness of just being fed up a little bit. And everyone is a bit fearful as well of where we are. Everything that comes with it, we'll get into the possible FFP breach in a moment. I think everyone is just a little bit hurt and fearful. And when you're watching Everton lose and there's 37,000 of you, it can feel, you know, more. But look, what I do want to say on the podcast is last Monday we recorded myself and Judgey. We weren't aware at the time, obviously, of the sad death of our chairman, Bill Kenwright. On Tuesday, Judgey done a show pre-recorded for Thursday. So we managed to get a little 30 seconds thing in the intro for that. I just want to go on record for Across the Park. I'll bring Judgey in to talk about it as well. He's a much better speaker than me. Just really condolences to all his family, friends and supporters. He has been someone who's divided opinion and I never really want to revisit that. And I've been a part of discussing Bill Kenwright and things and I'm never going to revisit that. The Evertonian has sadly lost his life and we should concentrate on, you know, the positives that Bill Kenwright did do. The Hillsborough tributes where he was just phenomenal for picking the songs. He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother. His dialogue with the families. He was a big part of Everton in the community. So for me, I think we concentrate on that. We never look back at the negatives now. It's in our rearview mirror and we don't revisit it. Judgy, I do want to bring you in. I think the timing of the leak of the Premier League, it can only be the Premier League who leaked this, that they want the 12-point deduction to be our penalty. First of all, just a little comment from you on Bill Kenwright. And secondly, the timing of that is nothing short of disgraceful. We've got an interim board. We're wide open. The club is in mourning. I thought that was a terrible timing for the Premier League to leak that.
I don't think the Premier League care. I think the Premier League is so terrified. I'll come back to Bill in a moment.
Yeah.
The Premier League is so terrified about the impending independent body that are coming in and about looking weak that they just wanted to get the. They didn't care about that. I think it was poor, but it was a poor decision from whoever made that decision to leak it. But on Bill, look, I think you said it perfectly. I think you're doing yourself a discredit to say you're not a good speaker. You're a lot better than me. But from my point of view, Bill was an Evertonian as much as any one of us. You put any one of us in the shoes that he was in for those years and we would have made far from perfect decisions. We would have done loads of things that we would have regretted because we're not direct, you know, we've not trained to be directors. Bill was an Evertonian. He'd done what he felt was best for the club. So many personal tributes have come out from people who knew Bill professionally and personally a lot better than we ever will. And some of the personal touches that he added to his part that he played to the club were priceless. And some of the people he's influenced and you know, and made a big difference to their life. It was lovely to see and lovely to hear. And that's what I want to hear over the foreseeable future is all of the things that he's done that made a difference to people's lives. And that's what it should be about when people pass in the main, unless there's a, you know, good reason for that not happening. But yeah, from my point of view, you know, it's unfortunate what happened towards the end from a professional point of view. I think everyone looks at it now and wishes it could have happened differently. But even from the fans' perspective, we were doing it for the same reason that Bill would have done it, for the love of the club. And I think he understood that. I'd like to think he understood that. But there would be nothing. I haven't heard anything but you know, respect and tribute to Bill. And that's the way it should be.
Absolutely. Pat, moving up back over to the game, you're over specifically for the Burnley League Cup game. Before we get onto the game, how excited are you to get back under the lights at Goodison Park?
Oh, I can't wait. I've seen one that was semi under the lights. It started at like 4 p.m., I think. It was a Sunday game. So the second half was under the lights, and the Manchester United game last year was under the lights. It's a completely different atmosphere.
Yeah.
I've been to three total, one and a half during the day, one and a half at night. and at night, yeah, it's a different animal. But on Bill, if we go back a little bit,
of course.
My perspective from supporting abroad, we don't have the biggest fan base in America, obviously, but I would say we have by far the most passionate fan base in America. You're not going to meet someone who sort of likes Everton because that's the team they play with in FIFA.
Yeah, I mean,
plenty of people like that who are like that with United or Chelsea. Yeah. But if it's Everton, you really fall in love with Everton. And that's, I think, at least partially because Bill Kenwright ran it as a passion project more than a business in a lot of ways. And there's fair criticisms of that strategy. Mm. I mean, it's modern era. You have to run it as a business. I get that. But that I think had a big effect on what the character of the fan base is for people who came into supporting Everton from abroad during the time that he was chairman. Hopefully there'll be a good tribute at the Burnley game.
I think there will be. I think there's plans. I think there's plans to do a minute's applause and possibly play a track which is synonymous with Bill. So I think there will be. Yeah. How full Goodison is on Wednesday, I don't know. I think it's sold out. Oh, okay. As of today, it's sold out. Fair enough. Really. So that's great in itself. And hopefully we'll have a big tribute. But the game itself, some teams, managers, fan bases, they look past the League Cup. For you, is this a real chance, Everton, to do well this season, this trophy, the League Cup?
Yeah, because City are out of it, Tottenham are out of it, Brighton are out of it, United and Newcastle play each other. Arsenal and Liverpool both have away fixtures. So it could very well be that this, after this week, turns into a wide open competition. I wish we were a little bit higher up the table.
Yeah.
And be a little bit more excited. Mm. But man, if I was in like West Ham's position, sitting mid table, not worried about relegation after 2 years of relegation scraps, I'd be looking at it as a real chance to win a trophy. Mm-hmm. Just because you see Manchester City and Tottenham out,
it's
pretty wide open.
Georgie, would you play a strong team on Wednesday? What Pat said there about big clubs being out and maybe other clubs, it's not their sole interest. If Everton win on Wednesday night, we're in the quarterfinal of a cup with big teams out. Would you go strong for that reason?
Absolutely. I'd go as strong as we could, with a few exceptions. I think there are some players within the squad who would not, you know, who would come in and not make a huge difference or have a negative impact on the way the team's playing. I think Garner Guy probably comes into that category. I think he probably needs some minutes and could benefit from some minutes. I think Beto probably falls into that category as well. I think from Beto's point of view, briefly, I know there might be a question on that as well. I think he's someone who needs to feel like he's the main man. So if Sean Dyche says to him, look, this is your chance here, it's the cup competition, you play well here, you score here, you're back in for the next round, which is potentially a quarter final. It could give him that confidence he needs. I wouldn't make too many changes apart from that. Certainly don't want to see Michael Keane back in there. I think keeping that back four as solid as possible, which has been the bedrock of our success in recent weeks, I think is important. But I'd maybe just give some of them fringe players some minutes. I think Dan Juma maybe falls into that category for a McNeil or for, you know, for a Harrison, depending on, you know, the sports science team will know which one's more fresh out of the two. I certainly don't want to be losing key players to injury. I think Dom and Calvert-Lewin, we do need to look after them. As much as I'd love to see him come back in, score one, score two, get us through, I think if he came in and got injured, you'd just be, it would really have a huge impact on our season. So I think Beto coming in, maybe Ganagai. I'd like to see Patterson stay on the team. I thought he had a decent game yesterday, and I think he needs consistency. But yeah, maybe two, three maximum changes.
Trying to give us a quick prediction, Judgy. League Cup. If we win, they're into the quarter final. Like I said, Burnley, not in the best of form. What would you give a prediction for Wednesday night?
3-0. I think we'll come flying out the traps. I think if it's a full house, I think the tributes are built. I think the fans will be right behind them. I think the players will be really up for it. I think it's, you know, playing at home in the cup, it'll be a refreshing change, I think, for some of them. Yeah, I think we'll get a goal early, and I think it'll be difficult for Burnley after that. I think they might make a host of changes, given that their priority at this time has got to be the league.
Pat, do you want to give us a prediction?
I would say 2-0. I'm not as optimistic, but I think we'll win. Yeah, hopefully it's worth flying halfway around the world for.
I hope so, mate. I absolutely hope so. Look, we'll close that section out. We're going to move on to the socials. Before we move on to socials, I'll be back on Thursday with Albion Obsessed, a Brighton fan channel who've been on before. And myself and Albion Obsessed will preview remotely the Everton versus Brighton game on Saturday. So we're not going to touch that in this episode. Got some socials for you. Pat, I want to start with you. That's okay. Rory on our Twitter. He's asking thoughts on where Beto possibly fits in now. Is he resigned to just be Lewin's backup, or could you possibly see the pair of them playing together?
I wouldn't mind seeing them play together, but it's not a strategy playing two center forwards that is regularly used. So I don't know what to expect. Would it just be like straight up long balls? Would one learn how to play off of the other? Because it's not as simple as just saying, we got two big guys up front. You have to teach them to work together because they're used to being lone forwards. Mm. So I thought Tchermidi coming in yesterday was really interesting. Mm. I'm hoping that means that Beto plays on Wednesday. Mm. But it is him coming off the bench ahead of Beto. Yeah, I think that right now he is clearly the backup. Mm-hmm. And as long as Dom keeps scoring, I don't really see a way into the team for him.
That's a great segue, really, Judgy. We've got another question from Joe on Instagram. And what Pat just mentioned there, He said, Judgy, why do you think he picked Schmitty to come on opposed to Beto yesterday to close the game out?
And there's two things. I firmly believe it's because Beto's going to get the minutes on against Burnley, and Chimiti's a young kid who you don't want to just see completely out in the cold. It's too early at this stage for us to be sending him out on loan, which may well happen in January, depending on the fitness of the other two players. I think the second thing is just horses for courses as well. You know, Chimiti's probably a bit quicker than Beto, a little bit more mobile in a different way. I think it was one of them where you wanted someone to keep chasing around and Harry in that back four. I think what you're seeing from Beto when he came on in the derby doesn't do a lot of that running. He's kind of a bit more laboured off the ball and not really accustomed to chasing people down, and I think that's what we needed coming on against West Ham for the last 5 minutes, to just keep that energy high, make it difficult for the back four playing out, whereas Beto is more of a traditional target man. I think going back to the just briefly on the point that the Pat just made, I think he's spot on. I think the other couple of things I'd like to add is there's not many examples in recent times in the Premier League of two target men playing together successfully. Dyche's done it to a certain extent with Barnes and Wood at Burnley, but it was more the exception than the rule. Yeah, but I think Pat's spot on. You need to work on it. Those players need to know what their defined role is at a given time. Whether it's when the ball goes out to the left-hand side, you're the target man, and the right-hand side, you're the target man. It could be that way. The other way is, look, you're the target man, you play off him. But when the last time we've seen them together against Luton, it looked a mess. It looked like they'd never worked on any of that, and we can't have that again. So if it is going to happen, whether it's Chimiti and Calvert-Lewin or Beto and Calvert-Lewin, they all need to know, if you're playing with him, this is your role. If you're playing with him, this is your role. And for the players playing around them, this is how you play when we've got two target men. Clearly, that didn't happen last time, and I wouldn't like to see any of them play together until it does happen.
Yeah, fair. Tommy on Instagram, he's a message for me. He said, Millsy, I said hello at the women's game last week. I do remember Tommy, yeah. Big fan of the show. Are we going to start covering the women's team more? I think intermittently we'll possibly dip in and out of it. Me and Georgie don't go to every women's game. If you do go to women's games like you obviously do with Tommy, you know it's a different environment.
You go all the home games now.
I go most of the home games, yeah. But it's a different environment. I can't foresee us doing an instant match reaction to an Everton women defeat there, because it's different. It's a really nice family atmosphere. Me and Judge do support the women. We really, really do. But in relation to the podcast going there, I think there's other podcasts that do it. And myself and Judge will concentrate on the men's team, and we'll dip in and out of the women as and when. Liam D, Patty, it's not really a question, but we can discuss it. He said, it's not a question, but I want you lads to credit Mikulenko. He's in really good form. Left back is no longer an issue for us. Would you agree with that?
Just about. He's not contributing as much as I'd like to see going forward.
Yeah.
But I don't think Dyche is asking much of him going forward, and I think that's why he's been so good defensively. But wingers can't get past him right now. He's been great. Long may that continue. I think having Branthwaite in the back four makes it much more stable and a much easier environment. We got to remember he's a young player. He's 22, 23, something like that. So he's still developing. This is his second full season in England. It's a much more physical league. I think he's put on a little bit of muscle in the off season. He's been excellent when he's played. I think right now he's got left back on lock, and then right back is Patterson, Coleman, and Young all competing for one spot. It's great to see him, and hopefully he'll start getting forward a little bit more as he gets a little bit more confidence, because that's the only thing performances like this are going to cause, is him to be more confident.
Yeah. Good points. Judgy, Richie on Instagram, he wants you to talk about whether you agree with him, first of all. You think there's a really better balance in the team with Onana and James Garner as our two?
Completely agree. I think we've seen it in the Aston Villa game away, and we were disappointed to not see it the following game. Credit to the manager now, he's stuck with those two. I think Onana has looked like a different animal, and I used the second word purposely because he looks like an animal. He's flying into tackles, he's up and down the pitch, endless energy, he's relishing that freedom. He's got a good relationship with Garner. Garner, for me, by a mile is the best technician that we've got as a midfielder. He's got that ability to switch the play, sees passes that other midfielders don't see, and he can execute them. So yeah, really enjoying that pairing in there, and you know, long may that continue.
Last question before we move on, Pat, to talk about your emotional connection to Everton, shall we say, and why on earth you chose this football club. We'll move on to that, but last question, Judgy. It's Pablo on Twitter, and he says, can we ask our fans to start being more patient with Nathan Patterson? He was looking online yesterday. Fans were getting on his back early in the game. Let's not forget that Seamus Coleman and Leighton Baines both took 2 seasons to break in as young fullbacks.
Yeah, and certainly in the case of Seamus Coleman, he had the best part of a season and a half on loan as well. Yeah. You know, it's the Blackpool one that kind of gave him the big, you know, boost, if you like, from a confidence point of view. But yeah, and it's exactly what Pat was saying about Mikhailenko. Expectations are sometimes our biggest worst or our worst enemy as fans, and they certainly are for the players. Mikhailenko came in with a figure on his head. People are expecting a new Leighton Baines. Patterson's come in following in the footsteps of Seamus Coleman. Let's make no mistake about it. Those two fullbacks are the best fullbacks we've seen since the 80s. Mm. So they were outstanding, and Seamus Coleman's still there, obviously, but Leighton Baines is one of the best left-backs the Premier League's ever seen. So to follow in those footsteps is always going to be difficult. Nathan Patterson, likewise, with Coleman, a massive servant to the club and an outstanding fullback. I really like Patterson, but he's a kid. He needs time. And he's, you know, you watch him for Scotland and he's a different player because he's playing with those shackles off and he's playing with players and fans who get behind him and believe in him. And we need to follow suit.
Yeah, fair enough. Pat, let's move on to yourself. Anyone who's probably watching over in the States, they hope this will be an interesting segment of the show. Imagine when you're growing up, I know soccer in the States now is big. I imagine not so much when you were a young boy. Why soccer? Why Everton?
So it's a very widely played sport,
okay,
but it's not a widely watched sport because the MLS is not on the same level globally as baseball or football or American football, or hockey even, or basketball. But yeah, those are the big four. And then the MLS is like, that's there too. So yeah, it's very widely played, particularly in suburban areas. Not so much in urban or rural areas, but I think when I was growing up, I think it was the most played sport in America.
Wow.
But it's just the fan infrastructure, I guess you could say, is probably a better word for that. I've slept for an hour in the last 24 hours, so vocabulary isn't my strong suit right now.
I feel
now,
like maybe when you're growing up, you were maybe not given a soccer team by, like, me and Judgy.
Exactly.
Our dad would give us Everton, and we're stuck with it. You maybe not so much. You chose to like the sport and like the team.
Yeah, I grew up playing, I'll call it soccer to differentiate from football.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah, wasn't tough enough to play American football. so yeah, soccer was what I grew up playing. We never really had access to watch Premier League games until, I think it was 2008 that we got, it was either 2007 or 2008, we got, it was called Fox Soccer Channel.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had probably 4 or 5 Premier League games on every weekend. So we got that with our cable package, got added to TV for us. And I was like, I got to pick a team to support.
This is a young boy at this stage. Or?
I was 17.
Okay.
At this point, yeah. Yeah.
So you're old enough to make your own sensible decisions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the reason, the question of why Everton, I pulled out the old family laptop and started searching cities in England, because in America, you pick the team that you support based on the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I'm wearing an Eagles hat right now, so I'll use the Eagles as an example. I don't have any strong connection to the Eagles as an organization. Mm. The Eagles play a sport that I love to watch, and they represent the city where I grew up outside of Philadelphia, from South Jersey. South Jersey is the world of Philadelphia, so it's Philly-ish.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So I just figured that's how it is everywhere. So I picked a city that I thought was most like Philly. And Liverpool's what I settled on. It's a very working class city, very passionate about sports. and yeah, very, very proud of its history. Certainly misunderstood, to say the least, in the media. Everyone thinks people from Philly are mean. we're direct,
yeah,
be fair.
Scouts are but, the same.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Philadelphians are very friendly. We're the kind of the American version of Scousers,
yeah,
in a lot of ways. But it's not a perfect analog. And as I grew into being an Everton fan, I started to be more interested in Everton itself than the city. And then in 2012, I came over here for the first time, and I was like, this place is great. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone here is friendly, and it's a great environment, ton of history. So yeah, I love being over here. I've been over here four more times since then. But yeah, it's a connection directly to the club, even though initially I tried to look at it through the way that I support Philly teams.
I was going
to
say, were you not tempted by Liverpool then, because you were tempted by the city?
See, this isn't fair to Liverpool fans, but I got Dallas
Screw
Cowboys.
Them. Screw them, go for it.
I got Dallas Cowboys fan vibes from Liverpool fans. And that's the Eagles' rivals. They're also hands down the worst fans in sports.
He's on the right lines, isn't he?
Yeah.
The right direction.
Just the arrogant sides of it, and like kind of.
Well, it's not even like with Cowboys fans. It's they haven't been good for a long time, and they know that. But they still think that they're the biggest team in the NFL. Whereas Liverpool, they're actually good.
Yeah.
And I haven't met a Liverpool fan over here who I dislike, to be fair.
You'd have messed enough of them.
Yeah, we can have our friends around here in no time, trust me.
But no, it's they're good people who are delusional about sports.
That's a good way.
I'm going to use that.
Bottle that, yeah. Put that as a quote on the wall.
Look, another question. Me and Judgy and almost every Evertonian, we coined the phrase "Evertonians are chosen." You wouldn't really choose this life. It's special, the connection, and despite what happens between us, supporter, that football club, the love seems to get stronger. Did you feel that when you got that connection, it got stronger and stronger? And as a fan from the States, were you surprised at how much now you are an Evertonian?
Yeah, I didn't think that there was ever going to be a team that I liked more than the Eagles.
Hmm.
You know, like that's the Philly team of choice. That's the biggest team there. But it's completely different with football.
Mm-hmm.
Right, with soccer to differentiate. Yeah, you guys, yeah, you know what I mean.
That's fine.
It's not like supporting American teams, because it's you're directly supporting the club as opposed to supporting a city that you love. Supporting the club. I don't know how to explain exactly.
And that's the perfect answer. When someone says to me, why Everton, or to Judge you on holiday, you got your Everton training kit on. Why Everton? I don't know. It just happened, and I can't get enough of it. So it's a perfect answer. Yeah. Judge,
it's easier to answer why I chose Everton than why I wake up every Saturday morning and watch games and let it affect my entire day.
Yes.
Spend thousands of dollars to travel over here all the time.
Yeah. When me and Judgy were speaking about getting you on, I'll leave Judgy with the final sort of question before we let you get on and go and see the sights and things. Me and Judgy were talking about, you said, Judgy, how surprised you were glad Pat was coming on. You wanted to talk about how passionate that you see, you know, English soccer fans in America. You coined the phrase that they always seem so passionate, and you wanted to speak to Pat about that.
I wouldn't say
you never passionate. See a group of fans who don't really the half arsed kind of
yeah, thing. Yeah. So, I mean, the question I've got is one of my good friends went and done the Chicago Marathon. A month or so ago, and he went over there, and the day before the Everton game was on, so he went somewhere to watch it. Ended up finding or stumbling across the, you know, Everton fan club or whatever from Chicago. He said, and he sat there and he watched the game with them. And you might have this, and you may not. If you're the only person who supports Everton, you might not be able to necessarily relate. But he said, I sat there and I enjoyed watching an Everton game more than I've watched an Everton game in years, because every person has a little nickname for the players, and they talk fondly about them, you know, and they weren't getting on the back all the time. They were like looking for reasons to kind of, and every time, you know, there was a foul, they were having a go at the opposition. It was like, it felt good again to support Everton. He's like, if I had watched that with my friends, they'd have been looking for every reason to slag them off. They'd be like, oh, that's happened again. They're picking up on every positive aspect. Do you find yourself doing that when you're watching a game, as if you're getting behind the club and the players, and you feel like you need to defend them? Or is that just a, was that just that particular?
See, Philly is the one exception to American fans having a strong tendency to get behind their team.
So Philly's more
there are Philly sports t-shirts that I've seen people wearing that say "just boo it" as a play on "just do it." Yeah.
Oh my God. That's good.
So, brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, next American fan you have over here. That's a great question.
Love it.
But no, I have the
So when he does the Philadelphia marathon, you get him to go to a fan club, it might be a bit
different. Exactly. Yeah, it might feel a little bit more like home.
Love it.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Pat, it's been really great to get you on. I know you've just landed hours ago. You came straight to our studio here in the amazing Pod Cafe Studios. But from myself and Georgie, thank you for coming on the channel.
Oh, thanks for having me. Great to be back.
Up the toffees, eh? Look, Pat's going to be at the Burnley game. I'm sure you'll see him around Goodison. Please come and give him a warm welcome and a shake in the hand if you do see him. Myself and Judgy be down there as well. If you see us, by all means, do come over. Thank you to Pod Cafe, this amazing studio, once again for hosting us. Thank you to our sponsors, Veyr Clothing and Globe Gas and Heating. I'm in a good mood. Pat's in a good mood. Judgy's in a good mood. We'll have to get a pint. As always, up the toffees.